Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Watched the swirl of smoke from candles burning, while Mary looked up yearning. I got confirmed and I confessed, I really felt that I was blessed. Plus I love my uniform, so did the boy who lived next door. But something changed when I became of age, and all those things I thought true, someday I'd break the big taboo of letting go of God.
And we're live. This is WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM here in Knoxville, Tennessee. This is the Free Thought Radio Hour. I'm Doubter 5, and on the phone with us we have the Wombat. Say hi, Wombat. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour is a call-in talk radio show about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and the sciences. Conversely, we also talk about religion, religious faiths, God's holy books, and superstition. And if you get the feeling that you're the only non-believer in Knoxville, well, you're just not. There are several atheists and free-thinking rationalist groups that exist right here in Knoxville and in East Tennessee. And I'll be... Hello.
Hey.
We trying it again. Okay, I guess that works. Okay, well, we'll be talking about those free thought groups after the mid-show break, tell you how you can connect with them. And did you also know that there was an atheist call-in television show broadcasting here in Knoxville? Did you know that, Wombat?
I knew all about it. Let me tell you something. My favorite part is when I guess Uncle Duck drops into like this big pool of coins, and you can swim in coins. And I thought, man, that's great. It just reminded me of my childhood.
Uh-huh.
Not swimming coins, but just watching Duck swim in coins. I think it's great. There's adventures and kids going around. I love it. Great show.
Yeah, that's not it. One of these days you'll catch it. It's a TV show. It's on every Wednesday night. Matter of fact, it's on right now. It starts at 6:30, runs to 7:30. It's on Comcast Channel 12. Or what's the other one? Comcast 12 or Charter Channel 192. And it runs between 6:30 and 7:30. And if you can't catch it because maybe you're watching this show or listening to this show, then you can always go to YouTube and look for Free Thought Forum Knoxville, just three words, and give it a shot. There's 8 years of back show on it. There's some sound coming through your end, Wombat.
Sure, I am driving.
Oh, okay. Well, that may do it then. We'll try to work with it. Try to keep your mind on the road. Anyway. Ask you questions, what?
You can like, ask me questions and unmute me, like raise the volume on me, or I don't know, you have the sound configured.
Okay. Now, it's just like it's a breaking, like a squelch is breaking or something. When you're not talking, we hear static.
Oh, my bad. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, you just have to keep talking. And there he goes again. He's dropped the phone line, whether intentionally or not. But I'll tell you a little bit more about the groups while he gets home and gets on the line. Welcome
is
back.
Is this any better?
I'll tell you when after a minute or two when I get a chance to hear it. It's a little better. It's not quite as bad as it was. Anyway, let's get started. Their topic was can we trust the Bible? And if not, why not? What do you think, Wombat? Let's start off on a back and forth here. Do you think we can trust the Bible?
I think we can trust certain parts of the Bible, and I think other parts of the Bible we have to throw a lot of skepticism at. And it's based on what is the Bible saying in that particular verse. Is it saying, hey, oceans have water? Well, we can test that. But the things that we can't test are the ones that we should be more skeptical about. What do you think?
Yeah, I definitely agree. And some of the things that we can't test, like some of the claims that they had back in the day, that the Bible was written. You know, it's just they're miracles and miracle claims. David Hume told us 200-300 years ago that we can't trust miracle claims because men have been known to lie or exaggerate or be mistaken. And if a miracle claim, if we were to accept miracle claims, then we would have to accept that it was more likely that the laws of nature were broken than a person either made up a story, lied, or was mistaken or fooled. And that just doesn't hold water.
You're throwing all kinds of razor at it, and I like that. But I wonder, how are you defining a miracle? What do you mean by a miracle, and is that testable?
Well, I mean, we can look it up online real quick. I know you can't, you're driving. But usually miracles are things that are surprising and an unwelcome event that is not explicable by natural or scientific laws and therefore is considered to be the work of a divine agency. In other words, if it can't be explained by nature and it goes against the laws of nature, then some people will call it a miracle. And of course it would be a miracle if it actually broke a law of nature. So David Hume says, you know, there's no reason to believe any of those because, well, unless you yourself were witness to one, and even then you'd have to worry about that you may have inadvertently hallucinated it. You may have had an auditory hallucination. You may have had an epileptic seizure of some kind. You may be hearing voices that aren't there. They're just in your head. There's a lot of natural explanations for the things that people can witness and call a miracle. But for a second party, there is no reason for any miracle claim to be accepted by a second party.
I got one thing to add on that. So you said a miracle is something that defies or is it yet explained by natural laws or by science.
Uh-huh.
The thing is, we have natural laws that are not... prescriptive of the universe,
mm-hmm.
They're descriptive of the universe, which means they're used to describe the universe as we see it with our current understanding of the universe.
Uh-huh.
They aren't predictions or laws put down by all-powerful beings. And the importance of knowing that is that when someone observes a natural law, they can be broken. These laws that we have are broken by an ever-expanding scope of science. As our understanding of the world improves, as our scientific understanding of the world improves, so does our scope of science, which means that it's not complete yet. So when we have something that we can't explain with a natural law that might need to be revised, or through science, which hasn't maybe expanded that field of, you know, observation yet, that doesn't necessarily mean that it was made by an observer or by a divine being. That could just be a phenomenon that has yet to have a grounded scientific explanation for it yet.
Right.
And that's a completely different thing, and not necessarily proof for a God.
Right. And even if it were, and I've made this point before on the program, even if for some absurd reason you could actually point to a thing, an event like that and say it was a God, it would still not point to any particular God. You know, it could be one of the gods of Hinduism or a god of Muslim, you know, a Muslim god. It could be any of the 10,000 gods that we know of or have worshipped in human history, or even some god that we may have never heard of. But believers come and point to every little thing, like the birth of a child, and say, see, that's proof of my God being real. And that's not proof. It's, as a matter of fact, first of all, it's not a miracle. It happens every single day, literally. And even if it was a god, it wouldn't be necessarily your God. So believers don't seem to think about that.
We are talking about can we trust the Bible and what is there to trust? And I think my distinction is that, you know, for the common mundane phrases, I'm totally fine with it. But for the miraculous things, things that are based on miracles, it's hard for me to come to terms with it because I'm giving a wishy-washy word that doesn't necessarily mean anything. As, for example, miracle. Like, just because someone claims a miracle exists, the means of how they define that word is important. And if they're defining it as something that can't be tested, or something that doesn't necessarily prove that a God exists, or something that's just not yet explained by science is better explained through just ignorance, mm-hmm. and having I don't know is your better answer,
yeah.
then it's not very good proof that a supernatural being existed. And if,
well,
if the Bible itself is claiming that a supernatural being existed right. based on miracles, mm-hmm. it's not convincing.
Well, it's certainly not proof, but it's not even evidence if you get right down to it. It's
not good evidence.
It's a claim. The best you can say about it is somebody's pointing to it and making a claim that it is proof or evidence when it literally is not. One thing we can say about the Bible is that it was written during a time that we have very little other insights into, like the world of the Jewish aristocrat or the Jewish Pharisees. 2,000 years ago, 2,500 years ago. And we don't have a lot of information about that society, but the Bible gives us an awful lot of information, an awfully good insight into that particular period of time and society. So it's a wonderful source of information for that. But I certainly wouldn't underscore miracle claims for it and point to the Bible. That's just circular reasoning. The miracle of the Bible is true because the Bible says it's true. It doesn't work. I mean, if that were true, every book would be true.
There are some even inconsistencies as far as a historical text goes.
Uh-huh.
Like, there are things that are said in the Bible that are not corroborated through any other historical text during that time.
Right.
Mm-hmm. For example, the evacuation of slaves from Egypt by Moses.
Right.
Like, in the Bible, it says thousands upon thousands of slaves, you know, just up and left Egypt.
I've heard estimates of up a half a million people.
A lot. I was trying to be generous. But still, like, there's no corroborating story among Egyptians
mm-hmm.
or among any of the people that the Bible claims that they passed through.
Mm-hmm.
Like, these are people who have written, you know, systems. They have means of communicating with each other.
And we're very good at chronicling their systems on a day-to-day basis.
They had economies. They had means of talking to a bunch of other different countries. And no one mentioned, oh, by the way, Egypt lost, like, 1.5 million slaves today. How weird.
We're going to have excess food for a while.
Let's go ahead and invade them.
Yeah, we won't have any more bricks, but we'll have a lot of food. Because they were making the bricks.
There are things in the Bible that seem to be, like, name drops of, like, current rulers at the time.
Uh-huh.
But even, like, the concept of, like, the Jesus figure seems to be borrowing from verbally passed folklore that existed during that period of time.
Uh-huh.
And is, at best, you know, most likely an amalgamation of a lot of different stories and figures of that time that ultimately made the character of Jesus. And we have this problem where when we try to, like, verify, like, one tale from the very beginning to the very end, the storyline of Jesus, even as, like, a historical note, not even talk about the miraculous things he did, but just as here's the person, is very spotty. Like, we have the statement of a birth, like, that he happened, but, like, the timing of, like, the weather patterns that they were providing and the means of how they were traveling are very ambiguously given.
Uh-huh.
We skip to his teenage years, and then we skip to his adulthood, and then after that, we don't really know much after that, aside from depending on what gospel that you're reading. And we can combine them, sure, but how reliable is it when you're combining multiple different texts to get one clear picture?
Right.
That you're relying on multiple figures who mm-hmm. claim to be the person who wrote the story
mm-hmm.
or were there at the time.
Yeah.
It just puts more credence on skepticism than it is on taking it as a 100% fact.
Right. And what gets me is, you know, they say there's no contradictions in the Bible. You can talk to Christians all over the world, and they'll tell you there's no contradictions. But even according to Dan Barker's book, he says, I dare anybody, or I challenge anybody, I guess he should say, to reconcile all the four Gospels just in who was at the first at the tomb and who was there at the tomb when it was open. You know, there's four different stories, stories there. They cannot be reconciled. One of the easiest things is, what was the last thing Jesus said? The different stories give different, quotes. But, you know, you say that to a Christian and they'll give you, three videos and two books to read about why it wasn't a contradiction. when it actually was. I mean, the text is there, plain as day. You could read it for yourself. And a lot of people say, well, it's in the contradiction. I mean, it's in the translation. The thing about it is people don't go by the translation. The fundamentalists who rant on the Bible every day and stand in front of abortion, women's health clinics and stuff like that, and shout at you from the street corner are taking the literal word from the King James Version. They don't have the translation. But as soon as you question something in the Bible, you know, the preacher will point, well, that must have been in the translation, you know, or look, read this apologetics. But even if you had the apologetics, the lay person, the person he's preaching to, doesn't have it. So anybody can believe, as long as they do believe, whatever they want from the Bible. But as soon as you start questioning it, you better have proof. They don't demand any proof for their own miracle claims, but they demand proof from anybody questioning it.
Have you considered that even if someone was to give you a version of the Bible that has all the Gospels reconciling with each other, that's still just one of many, many, many different versions of the Bible that are out there that people take as literal Gospel?
Yeah, well, I mean, if you can't really, and without losing something, without leaving out some things. If two people say they saw a car accident and both cars were red, and another person comes along and says, you know, they were blue, and then you reconcile it and say, well, the two of them said red and this one said, you know, then you've lost the blue one. I mean, the story about the blue one is gone. So if you reconcile it all, you're going to lose some of the stuff in the Bible. And of course you can't deduct.
If you combine them, if you said it was a red and blue car, well, then that's a third entity that neither party was talking about.
Right.
The blue guys weren't saying it was red and blue.
Yeah.
And the red guys weren't saying it was red and blue. Mm-hmm. If you said it was purple, that's its own new thing.
Uh-huh.
A lot of times, stories that are combined together, stories that are condensed,
mm-hmm.
like how we would see in the Bible, tend to be the product of an amalgamation of a lot of different folklores and stories and word-of-mouth things that are passed down from generations and generations that have existed even before, you know, the New Testament, even before Old Testament times.
Right.
And as a result, we have this weird hodgepodge of a book that we suspect, or a lot of people don't really put a lot of thought into, but it's actually a combination of things that we've had from pagan times, or pagan-inspired stories, Nordic God-inspired stories,
right.
Roman-inspired stories, and it's all combined in this wonderful, you know, cure-all to help everyone try to get on board, but it's not cutting the snuff anymore. Like, we have higher standards of what we expect to be true things now. We have better technology. We have better fact-checking mechanisms. And as a result, we should have hold ourselves to higher standards, particularly when it comes to a book that controls so much in a person's life.
Okay. Right. Especially when
walking to my bed.
Not only their actions, but their thoughts and their beliefs. Trying to get a little bit better on this mic. It's a two-sided mic, and I think I'm only getting one side. Anyway, so another thing about it, let's talk about Jefferson's Bible. Jefferson didn't like all the violence and the commandments and the slavery and all of that from the Old Testament. He didn't believe that a good God, would command all that stuff, so he just threw out the Old Testament. And he took all the good stuff from the New Testament and condensed it. Or basically, he took all the words of Jesus and left them, but removed all the miracles because he didn't believe miracles could happen. And it must have been a fabrication on the part of the people that were writing the book. And he ended up with a Jeffersonian Bible, which is available today on, you know, many book outlets. You can go to Amazon and get a copy of it if you like. But,
would you say that's any more trustworthy than a non-Jeffersonian Bible?
No. I would think it has less stuff and less claims in it, so I guess it will be more trustworthy in that in that manner. But you never know.
It would be less untrustworthy, but it doesn't necessarily make it more trustworthy. Like, if I had five people that are telling you a bald-faced lie, and then I showed you two people that are telling you a bald-faced lie, they're both untrustworthy groups of people that... Just because you have fewer claims that are not necessarily credible or reliable or testable doesn't necessarily make it the case that it's more trustworthy. And I think that a person who, you know, edited a book after the fact and gave you his own version of a condensed book, particularly when he owns slaves himself, is just another step in the, it's just another person in between the Jesus said this because this person said it because this person, or this, how do I put it? It's like a game of telephone, basically, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
And all Jefferson did is insert himself into that line, and I don't see how that makes it any more better to have another person insert their own perspective of what another guy said 2,000 years ago. If anything, it just makes it seem more incongruous to me that, you know, like, here's clear proof of people taking an interpretation of the Bible and supporting it and issuing it as if it was another holy version text, and either people taking it as a literal thing that Jesus said, despite the fact that it went through an editor that they themselves knew by name.
Right.
And probably went before Theophilus. It just seems, how many other times do you think that was done before you had a chance to get your book, before Thomas Jefferson had it?
Right. We don't have any of the original works. And even if we did, none of them were signed, except maybe the works of Paul. And even then, some people signed it saying, so you can tell by my hand that this is my work. And why would he say that if there weren't multiple forgeries floating around about that time? One thing that gets me about believers and their belief in the Bible is I was talking to somebody online the other day, and he tried to convince me that the Bible was true because all of the Old Testament predictions or prophecy about Jesus came true in the New Testament. And I told him, I said, you know, if I was writing the New Testament, I could probably even write it better than he did, because you have the Old Testament there with you. You could look at the prophecies and write Jesus doing anything you wanted him to. It's a wonder that he didn't fulfill them even better in the New Testament. But they forget that, you know, it's a work of authorship. Somebody sat down and wrote this thing. And they could write, matter of fact, many people did, a lot of different people, and they went through many hands between that time and now. And also, many of the people who were copying them had a purpose in making their religion more popular. Therefore, they had incentive, they had a motive to make it more wonderful and more believable, good than it could have been originally.
Right. And you had mentioned before that Apostle Paul's letters have been signed. It's a pretty good historical record that there was a guy named Paul.
Yeah, but we don't have any of the original documents. We just have documents that said it was him that did it, that wrote the document.
True. And it's not like, and we're talking about, the Christianity came from, essentially, or the Christianity that we have today, Protestant-based Christianity, came from the Catholic Church, who have, you know, a pretty long record of forging evidence for the existence of God. And that makes it even more skeptical on my part. But we can get into that in the second half. But as far as Paul goes, here's a guy, you know, whose only contact with Jesus is meeting him, supposedly, after he resurrected, and meeting him on the Damascus Road.
Right.
That's the only time
that he never met him while he was alive, you know, assuming he was alive.
Christ, and met his ghost on the way to heaven through Damascus. You know how to get to heaven, right?
Right.
You take a left at Damascus, and then you just go straight up.
Right. Or you take an up instead of a left.
Did you get lost on the way?
Yeah. Yeah. And getting back to Hume, I mean, that's a miracle claim. You know, life after death would be a miracle. And
not only that, but it's the existence of, like, ghosts,
souls.
It's a lot to go through. But still, like, before that, he has no claims. He has no claims of ever seeing, hearing, or being in the presence of Jesus. Yet he speaks very great volumes of them.
Mm-hmm.
And it speaks to the kind of, like, if that's the best source that we have in the Bible of a person who actually existed, and yet we still can't establish that there was ever any direct contact with a guy named Jesus Christ. What does that say about all the other apostles who claim to have one-on-one contact, yet their stories are technically written hundreds of years after the fact of Jesus? So, like, what does it say about the character of Jesus himself? Like, did this character actually exist as a single figure, or is he better yet just an amalgamation of a lot of different
Before we go into the break, let me just state, and I'm not sure many people know this for sure, but there are no contemporary writings about Jesus while he was alive. None.
Right.
Zero. Zilch. There are some that were made several years later, but those, if you look at those, all they're doing is talking about what the Christians say about Jesus. I mean, if you look at
if someone called and argued about that point, uh-huh. How would you clarify that?
I'd have them ask me. Well, there's Josephus was the earliest one, huh? But that was an interpolation. Most scholars, or all scholars pretty much nowadays, agree that it was interpolation, which means it was inserted. Because it's one paragraph that doesn't follow the flow of the thread of the text at all. It just jumps from whatever he was saying to, oh, there was a Jesus and he was the Christ, and then back to the flow of the conversation or the text that he was having. So, it was an interpolation, and everybody else was really just quoting the Christians of that time. And I would ask them to, give me any proof that they had otherwise. Anyway.
Just to make the point, when we say the Bible, like John, whatever, they never saw Jesus. These are books that are written way after the fact.
Right.
That's not the position of atheists.
Right.
Atheists aren't saying that. That's theologians who study Christianity. Mm-hmm. The grand majority consensus of theologians who study the Bible, that's their finding. That's the finding mm-hmm. of Christianity at the church.
Right.
They won't tell it to the pews. They won't tell that to the pews, the people who donate mm-hmm. their money and tithe.
Yeah, and that's how they're being dishonest. When we go to them and talk to them about those particular problems, they get on this high level and say, well, it depends on who you're talking to and what scholar is interpreting it and which language it's coming from. But when they're standing in front of the pews talking to 100 people, they're going letter per letter on the stories that are in the Bible in English. And I have a real problem with that.
The grand consensus of any all theology is that these books were not written in the time period that they were written.
Right.
And a lot of verifications of this are, and I recommend people check this out themselves, but as you had said, there are a lot of statements that are in the Bible that have been inserted over time, and to an extent are trackable just based on the level of diction that are being used with the insertions and the text that surrounds it. Almost to the point where sentences give away things that are explained in the future or later on in the text,
right.
But the sentence that's inserted conflicts with the sentence that's said later on. Like there will be issues, and I would recommend that people look this up, but it's actually pretty cool. I don't want to get too much into the minutiae. I would just say that there have been insertions from the Bible since time that people as monks have been writing the Bible by hand. And then once it got printed and through the Gutenberg Press and was issued to a lot of people, by that point we already had Protestantism in place.
Right.
And there are a lot of different variations of the Bible as a result. And so it took more time for us to finally land on New International Version. But before then, because of the widespread distribution of the Bible, you ended up with Africa having a different version of the same New King's or King James Bible than America, than compared to Spain, than compared to the one that ended up in Korea. And they all necessarily are English, but just because of the fact of how rapidly they were altered in a short period of time, you ended up with Bibles that had wholly different phrases, wholly different orders, wholly different kinds of dialogues that are in them that should be the same but aren't.
Right.
And people just have localized them. The Bible that they have in America or localized the Bible that they have in the past.
And started a whole new religions and sects, different sects over the different interpretations of the Bible. We've got 10,000 different Christian sects in the world today. We're going to have to stop here and take a break. This is the bottom of the hour. WOZO Radio, 103.9 LPFM, live right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Today is May 23rd. It's about 7:30. And we're going to take a little break. We always play Letting Go of God by Jill Sobule at the beginning of the show, but we never play the whole thing. So here's the whole thing. Enjoy, and we'll be back in about 5.
The swirl of smoke from candles burning while Mary looked up yearning. I got confirmed and I confessed. I really felt that I was blessed. Plus I love my uniform, so did the boy who lived next door. But something changed when I became of age, and all those things I thought were true, someday I'd break the big taboo. Trying to feel something. I came back home, I won't let go. So much more for me to know. I read the Tao of Physics and all those quantum mystics. Something did feel right. The arguments looked all that tight. And all those things I thought were true. Someday I'd break the big tape.
Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on Wozo 103.9 LPFM in Knoxville, Tennessee. Feel free to join in on the conversation at 865-333-5937. That's 865-333-5937. And now, back to the show. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Simply the best.
And we're back. Let's talk just briefly about the different atheist societies here in Knoxville, different free thought groups. There's the Atheist Society of Knoxville. They're now in their 16th year. They have over 800 members, and you can find them online at KnoxvilleAtheist.org, or you can go to meetup.com or Google and just search for Knoxville Atheists. They meet every week on Tuesday for happy hour for food, drink, and conversation. And lately they've been meeting at Black Horse Pub, that's in Bearden near UT. Everybody's welcome to come as long as you don't preach, proselytize, provoke, or punch. Thank you, Atheist Experience. The Rationalists of East Tennessee has bi-monthly meetings. They meet the first and third Sundays at the Pellissippi State Campus. It's usually about church time, about 10:30 in the morning, 10 to 12 or so. Go to rationalist.org and click on upcoming events. Then there's a Sunday assembly. Let's say that you like church, but you don't believe anymore and you miss it. you can go to Sunday Assembly. It's a no-God church setting for those who no longer believe in gods, but still like the fellowship of a church-type gathering. However, they only meet once a month here in Knoxville, and that's on the fourth Sunday of every month. They meet down near the World's Fair Park at the International Building. You can find them by doing a Google search for Sunday Assembly Knoxville. If you're a student, there's the Secular Student Alliance, which has programs to give camaraderie and community to any free-thinking high school or college student who would like to be involved in the free-thinking movement. Or we just like to have other free thinkers to hang with. Everybody needs like-minded friends, and atheists are no different. And we get back to the TV show we were talking about, which just went off 10 minutes ago. Every week there's an atheist call-in TV show. It's on Public Access TV, which is community TV. You can find it streaming online at ctvknox.org, or you can watch it on Comcast Channel 12, Charter 192. You can also find archives of their shows on YouTube, where a fan has been posting them. Just go to YouTube and search for three words, Free Thought Forum Knoxville. And if you'd like to get involved in the TV or the radio show, come to an Ask Meetup or an RAT meeting and talk to us about it, and you can be our next co-host or guest. I don't think I gave you the time. It's 6:30 to 7:30 every Wednesday on Comcast Channel 12. And I guess that's it. Back to our topic. Wombat. Let me give out the phone number again. 865-333-5937. And our topic today is, can we trust the Bible? And if not, why not? And we've been talking for about, half an hour on that subtopic. We still have another 20 minutes to go. So if you feel like it, call in and join the conversation. Where'd we leave off, Wombat?
So we were talking about, can you trust the Bible? And my opinion is, I can trust some parts of it. The parts that I can test, I can trust. Uh-huh. The parts that I can't test, yeah, I can't trust as much. And the parts that I really can't trust, test at all, I can't trust that, period.
Yeah, yeah.
So I extend my level of trust in something based on how much I can apply a reliable way to verify that if it's true or not. Mm-hmm. And I like testing. Testing is a really good way.
Do you have any specifics that you can share with us?
Oh, like a specific verse or a specific test?
Yeah, or story or whatever, that you feel that there's a test that you can put on it. Because I'm not sure that we can test anything in the Bible.
Anything in the Bible? Like the names of the continents, or for example, like I could say, hey, Jerusalem is the place. Like I've talked to people who say, hey, Jerusalem's in, or Israel and all this stuff exists in Mesopotamia at the time. And
okay.
I said, yeah, sure, that's fine.
Well, yeah, I guess we could corroborate some of the lineages and cities that are listed there. But outside of southeastern Europe or northeastern Africa, they don't mention any other continents at all. There are no other continents in the knowledge of God at this time, because he could have mentioned America or South America or Australia, China. Well, any of that he could have, but he didn't. Why not?
Sure, I would say at least in the setting, I would agree that the setting exists in the same way that I would agree that Spider-Man lived in New York, uh-huh, and New York is a real place.
Right, but
as far as like the things that happen inside that place, that's something that I can't test as rigorously,
right.
So I'm more skeptical of it.
Yeah, or King Arthur lived in England. Maybe he lived, maybe he didn't. But just the fact that England is there, doesn't make the stories real.
Exactly, and that starts to go into the realm of, I can test that England exists, but I can't test that King Arthur came from England.
Yes.
Or that magic existed and he had a wizard named Merlin. But I would say, like, Egyptians had slaves. I would say there's pretty good evidence archaeologically, geography, historically to support that. But as far as their mass migration out of Egypt, less proof. So, again, it's just a question of, if I can test it, I'm fine with saying that it's true. My open door reasonable policy is, if you can demonstrate that it's true, I'm fine with it. And if not, then I need more proof to support it.
You mean corroborated or so with other, from other sources?
Exactly.
Yeah. And historians.
I would say there's a couple of things that are true up to a certain limit. And it's just a question of, can it be tested and can it not be tested? And there's a lot more that can't be tested in the Bible, in my opinion, than things that can be tested. And that's just because we get it from it's not even a secondhand source. It's probably a 13th-hand source from just how many times it's been retold to the point where it was written, to the point where it was rewritten, to the point where Christianity broke off away from Catholicism, and now we have all these new variations of the Bible that have been written, and which of them is the most accurate story, and do any of them have the most accurate story at this point? These are the questions that need to be answered.
Right, and I don't think that they have been, but what gets me is when you look at the Bible and claim that it's historically accurate, that on the face of that, it's false. I mean, from the migration that you talked of, for sure. But let's talk about the global flood, or the reason that we have different languages. One thing after another after another. We know where languages come from, that came from, and it wasn't because everybody at the same spoke the same language in the same space, the same location, and then all of a sudden they couldn't. That's not the way languages work. The global flood, we know that there was no global flood in the last 5,000-6,000 years because there were civilizations that are extant, existing then, that are still existing. It's like the Chinese, it was a global flood? Really? We didn't know anything about it. Or the Egyptians? Yeah. No, they didn't know anything about it. But, it's real easy to see how fable and legend can grow into stories and religions. We see it even happening today. I look at Mormonism, that started, 200 years ago? And look at all the stories and miracles and everything that they say happened that none of the Christians would believe. But they see it happening in other religions, but they won't admit it happens in their own.
I'd also say this, another reason why it's hard for me to take the Bible as a trustworthy source is that its strongest advocates tend to be the least informed of what's actually inside that text.
Right, right.
Yeah. I've seen this with my own eyes. I think it was told on the Atheist Experience podcast, but I've also seen this myself, where someone gets a Bible for like their birthday or for like Christmas or something, and it's one of those Bibles that have all the text in red highlighted. All of Jesus' words will be highlighted in red, so it's like a red letter Bible. But what they'll do is they'll open up the book and they'll start flipping through the pages, and they'll be like, oh, there's nothing in the first half. What is it? Does Jesus not say anything in the first half?
And a lot of people don't even realize that the New Testament is only one quarter or less of the entire Bible. And they think, this is the book of Jesus. And actually, it's only about a quarter or a fifth of the book of Jesus.
It's not that much.
No. And the Gospels are really the only ones that directly have him speaking. That's only four books.
It's only four books out of many, many other books.
Yeah, and what is it, 62 books?
It's a very small part of the Bible, to be perfectly honest with you. It's kind of weird, considering he's, God incarnate on earth. Yeah, he only picks up four chapters. A really big book.
And if you want to talk weird, let's talk about Revelations. We haven't gotten there yet.
I don't know why you want to go there, but okay, sure.
Well, we were talking about why we could or couldn't trust the Bible.
Well, I believe in acid trips. I think the right plants were available. Yeah. There's definitely enough burning bushes to have those kinds of revelations appear to you.
Was that John the Baptist supposedly wrote it? Is that correct?
I have no idea who wrote them or who claimed to wrote them. I think John probably wrote one of them, but I have no idea. I don't have enough evidence.
The best explanation I ever heard, which made the most sense about for Revelation, was that they were writing in code, and like a dragon might stand for Rome, and the heads of the dragon might represent the different Caesars of the period, leaders of the period, or different continents that they ruled, and because they had messages that they wanted to send back and forth to each other, but they didn't want them to be intercepted by Roman soldiers and send them to the gallows for dissension. So they wrote in code. That to me makes the most sense, but if that's the case, then we certainly can't take that as the end time prophecy because it was just local stuff written in code.
No, I don't have any evidence to support my belief. I think my hunch might be that there was a guy who, you know, I think there's probably a group of people who've experimented with enough, you know, mind-altering herbs of some sort, or like drugs of some sort that they've made, and this is just their interpretation of what they were experiencing. Because typically when you have an experience like that, it's so phenomenal that you can't really condense it to anything other than just saying, well, it was a spiritual experience. There's still people who say that even up now.
Yeah.
So I think that's just a written version of some guy's spiritual experience who probably may have been very high in whatever society he was. And then ultimately when they're picking which books to put into the Bible, they probably had thousands of those kind of stories. They were like, well, at least this one comes from Fred. We can trust Fred.
So well, it may be even a more mundane explanation. It could be like a fever dream. You know, it had a lot of plagues back then and a lot of illnesses that would produce fevers.
I think the take-home message is that we just can't really, there's nothing concrete in there that we can take as something that naturally occurs in real life.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a series of a lot of wild claims, all of which aren't able to be tested, and all of which come from the perspective of a person who we don't really know very well.
Well, we don't know him at all. First of all, we don't know who wrote them. We have no original manuscripts. And even if you had your mother come in, running in the door saying, I saw fairies out in the garden, you got to come look. Then you go out there, you know your mother, you lived with her forever, you don't see any fairies, and she says, they were here. And you look at it and say, I don't really believe it. Maybe you saw something, maybe you took... maybe you're having hallucinations, or you're having an epileptic fit or a seizure or some kind. Maybe you're having just visual hallucinations. But we know the mother, and we will make special allowances for them. But we don't know anything about these people who wrote this book. And the only thing that I can say about the books with certainty is that it was probably written by the preachers of that time. And it'd be like Pat Robertson sitting down and writing a book and then saying, everything in this thing is true. It's all miracles that happen. And
don't forget
we wouldn't believe Pat Robertson, but we believe these guys, you know, from 2,500 years ago. You know, you got to remember that these priests, they lived in a position of power in the tribe. And they had power over them, and they had to make up these stories and make them superfluous. I mean, not superfluous, super, to be able to keep control of their flock and keep their position. They got to be able to to make predictions that theoretically will come true, and make wild stories up about the God and what he can do.
Not just wild stories, but stories that conflict with each other. Like, we have a character named Jesus who simultaneously tells us if you want to go into heaven, give up all your stuff to the poor. Or, if you want to get into heaven, give 10% of the stuff that you own to your local church. It's like, it could be one or the other, but it can't be both. One is the godly way, and the other one is a completely different way. So, like, which one is it? Am I supposed to give up all my possessions to the poor and follow Jesus Christ? Or am I supposed to keep my possessions and maintain a 10% income stream to the local church of my choice?
Right.
It seems like if both of those are dictated to me in the Bible, which one of them am I supposed to be following?
What if everybody followed the first one? Everybody gave away their possessions. I mean, the world would be totally populated by the poor. They'd be destitute because nobody would take the possessions. They'd just leave them laying around and just wander around telling each other about Jesus.
Now they have stuff. What are they supposed to do? Give it away to the next poor person?
Right.
Like, whoever you give it away to is people who are now damned to hell. It's a sense. It's so bizarre.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was a great point. I would say this, though. In the end of the day, if I had a time machine and we can go back in time and we can actually see the guy write the paper with a name tag and we can take the original documents from his hand, that doesn't prove that what he's saying is credible, because if it's not testable, it still deserves a higher level of scrutiny and skepticism than something that we can actually test.
Outlandish claims require credible evidence. It's the bigger the claim, the better the evidence has to be to support it.
Right. Having a document that's by the guy who says that dragons exist doesn't prove that dragons exist. We still have to test that. And if we can't test it, then it's still at the same level as you know, unicorns, leprechauns, magical elves, like these things that are being sought and testified to, people who are dying for these things, have not been demonstrated to a reliable extent where we can actually, you know, come to the conclusion that they might exist, or at least on a credible or justified level. We have these claims and we can't justify them because we can't test them. And if only we could test them, then we would have grounds to start taking them more seriously. But unfortunately, we jump the gun as a society. You have people who take these as the gospel, literally, and as a result, they don't care about testing them. And because they don't care about testing them, their standard has dropped, and when they expect other people, like, for example, an atheist, to take it seriously, an atheist is a person who needs good reasons to believe things. Yeah. And if they can't even meet them on that level, there's no way that they can convince them that what they're saying is true. And so this is why we have this issue with the Bible, where we have statements that we can't test and statements that we can, and we can only barely justify belief in the statements that we can test. Right. And those tend to be very mundane and benign to the ultimate cause of what the Bible is, proving the supernatural, which it fails to do.
Right. And one of the things that believers don't understand is, okay, let's say you're a Christian believer and you come to us with the Bible. Well, we've got Muslims coming up with the Quran. We've got Hindus coming up with the Gita Vida. You know, everybody has their own special book that says that their God is the only God. And not only are we looking at it and saying, you know, you need to prove the stuff that's in there. They don't realize that we're saying the same thing to every other religion. And they really have a double burden of proof. They've got to prove theirs is right and prove the other guys aren't, because theirs says the other guys is wrong. And they don't even realize that when they're talking to us, much less even approach, try and prove it.
Right. And to be honest with you, it's not even an issue of atheists saying atheists picking on religion or saying we don't believe you. It's you and the religion that you follow have failed to convince us.
Right.
You have the work to do to convince us because you have the burden of proof.
And that's really the extent of atheism.
It's your problem that you don't have a convincing case to convince people like us, because there's a lot more than just, you know, Doubter 5 and the Wombat. It's millions of people out there, and a lot of people who are closeted, even in your own faith, who don't take you seriously, that you fail to make a convincing case for us to believe in the things that you espouse to be true. So work on that. And once you do have a good case, then we'd be willing to listen to it. And listen, the first person who proves that a God exists, or the first person who proves that Tom exists, I'd be willing to be first in line and saying, all right, I was wrong. Good job on proving that. Now, the question of whether I worship it is a completely different thing.
Right.
But I will no longer be an atheist, and you will destroy my atheism. They're flat, and I have no choice but to admit that I'm wrong with that.
Well,
no one has come even close.
Right. Thomas Paine, one of the founding fathers. Excuse me, got a frog in my throat. One of the founding fathers of America, Thomas Paine, believed in God, but he didn't believe it's a Christian God because of the stuff in the Bible. He says a good, loving God, like my God, would not do the stuff in the Bible. You know, everybody says that God is love when they haven't read the Bible. If they read it, they find out that the most common way for God, that God interacts with people, is to kill them. Not only kill them, but give them diseases which kills them.
Punish them.
Yeah. Punish them for some way. So God, you know, this is why a lot of people start questioning, because they tell them that everything in the Bible is true, and then they also tell them that God is love. You know, and he cares for you more than any parent ever cared for a child. And they just can't believe that. And then they start looking into what the Bible says by actually reading it, and they realize that it cannot be the God of love. So what is it? You're still with us one minute.
We're getting close to the end of the time. How do you think? How much time we got?
We've got about 3 minutes, 2 minutes maybe.
Okay, so Jim, as a quick little summary, I would just say, hey, we, as far as can we trust the Bible, it's a little bit of yes, a whole lot of no's. The only issue is we can trust things in the Bible that we confess, and there's very few things in the Bible that we confess. For example, like Egyptians had slaves, or like their names of places, or the names of certain leaders who were in charge at a particular period of time. Those we're fine with, because those can be corroborated with other historical narratives. But the issue is we can't trust many of the fantastical miracle claims, or even like some of the more benign stuff in the Bible that's just flat out wrong because it doesn't agree with anything, like the mass leaving of slaves from Egypt, or like how people learn languages, or how the world came to be. Like, we have scientific evidence that demonstrates to us with testable, reliable methods that the stories in the Bible are not true. And not only are they not true, but the fact that people still take them as true speaks more about the conviction of a person who believes and not willing to comprehend, like, true claims through scientific or more reliable methods. And as a result, the Bible becomes less credible as a result. And not only that, but it becomes more dangerous and something to take 100% seriously, because it actually makes you more blind to more credible forms of determining information. So overall, I would say you can't trust a lot of things in the Bible. There are some things in there that are trustworthy, but they don't compensate as reliability for the untestable things that are made, or untestable claims that are made in the Bible.
True. It does give us a good insight into that period of time and that society that lived at the time of the Bible. Other than that, it's not got a whole lot of truth in it, as evidenced by what it says itself, and compared to what historians know about that period of time in the history before. Anyway, hope you enjoyed the show. We're here every Wednesday from 7 o'clock to 8 o'clock, WOZO
here
Radio 103.9 LPFM. Say bye, Wombat.
Hey, Wombat.
And this is Doubter 5 saying, don't worry about hell. Everybody's going to some other religion's hell. Don't sweat it. And we'll see you next week.
Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Simply the best.
WOZOLP 103.9 FM, Knoxville.